Here's Carlin Beer. She's an epidemiologist with the CDC and the National Center for Emerging and Zoonotic Infectious Diseases.
Great. Thanks, Tim. All right. Molds. They're a diverse and ubiquitous group of fungi. They grow using filamentous hyphae and they reproduce using spores. Most molds don't cause human disease, but those that do cause infections and they can be severe. The majority of invasive mold infections, well, not the majority, but predominantly they're caused by Aspergillus species, followed by mucormycetes, Fusarium, Scutosporium, and members of the pigmented or dematiaceous molds. Diseases are usually in the sinuses or the lungs, but as these photos show, disease can show up in any body site, including the brain and in skin. Mortality rates are high, upwards of 80 to 90%, and those at highest risk are neutropenic patients and those who have cancer or who have received transplants. Populations at risk for mold infections are actually growing. Hematopoietic stem cell transplants have increased. And those living with hematologic malignancies, numbers of people with hematologic malignancies are growing because incidence has increased while mortality has decreased. And surveillance for mold infections is either outdated or lacking. There's actually no population-based surveillance right now for mold. About 25 years ago in San Francisco, there was a population-based study that was important for getting incidence numbers, but it's now outdated and included a population that had a higher number of HIV-positive patients than today. Transnet was a multi-center study that focused on transplant recipients, but again, that focuses on a very specific population and is not population-based. And finally, we at CDC feel the need for mold infection surveillance. When we get calls from facilities and from states about clusters and when we need a baseline to decide whether or not an outbreak is occurring. And these are just three examples of outbreaks and clusters that we've investigated in the last 6 to 7 years. So I want to introduce you to the new mold infection surveillance pilot system. And I want to tell you how we developed it with a specific focus on using histopathology for case finding. So mold infection surveillance is a lab-based surveillance program developed jointly by CDC and the Georgia Emerging Infections Program, or EIP. Our catchment area includes 8 counties, 28 hospitals, and about 4 million residents as of 2015. But we're starting with a pilot in 3 major hospitals in the Atlanta area. That pilot went live just a couple months ago on March 1st, 2017, and we plan to scale up to the entire catchment area in 2018. And so, just like every airplane needs a good pilot, we thought a good mold surveillance system would need a good pilot, too. And, of course, piloting means to start small, to rework what you're doing, to evaluate, and then to modify and optimize based on how that pilot goes. And we think mold surveillance really needs this kind of pilot because mold infections are complex. They're complex because many pathogens can cause invasive mold infections. You can be colonized by mold without having an active infection, and we're interested in those active infections. There's no characteristic syndrome or constellation of symptoms, and there's no single body site that is infected by mold. And finally, there's a lot of different laboratory diagnostics you can use to identify mold infections, and when you have a laboratory-based surveillance system, it's important to be able to identify the best. So, because of all this complexity, our biggest challenge has been coming up with a robust case definition that's both sensitive and specific, but also logistically feasible to apply in a surveillance context. So the challenges of defining mold infection versus colonization have really been the biggest ones. And like a sheep in wolf's clothing, colonization can masquerade as infection, especially when you want to use laboratory results to define your cases. So to attack those challenges head on, we've adopted a broad and sensitive case definition for the pilot. We incorporated a medical record pre-screen that uses physician pre-screens before we move on to chart review for our cases. And we're excluding clear examples of colonization that we think are not mold infections. So specimens that come from hair or from nails and syndromes like allergic fungal sinusitis. And so next, because this is a laboratory-based surveillance system, we needed to define our cases in terms of laboratory results. So culture is the gold standard, and it's needed for species identification, but it can be low yield, and it doesn't indicate infection versus colonization. Histopathology can show tissue invasion, but species identification is difficult using pathology. And importantly, one study of mucormycosis showed that 30% of histopathology-confirmed mucormycosis cases were culture negative, meaning that if we relied solely on culture, we'd be missing a substantial proportion of these cases. Serologic assays like galactomannan for Aspergillus and beta-D-glucan are useful, and they're actually recommended in certain populations like transplant recipients. But for other populations, there's a lot of false positives. And finally, PCR is, of course, fast and efficient, but there's no one standardized test that everyone has agreed on. And so what I want to do is show you how we used culture and histopathology to craft our case definition. And so I'm going to focus on these two for the rest of the talk. So putting all of these decisions together and thinking about this case definition, we arrived at the intentionally sensitive case definition for mold infections shown here. We're excluding specimens that are clearly not mold infection. And the plan is to review our cases after about 6 months in order to identify additional exclusions and conditions that will let us increase the specificity of this very broad case definition. But in the last few slides, I really want to focus on the use of histopathology in the case definition because it's required the most development and innovation within the context of an EIP surveillance system. And so histopathology is actually not commonly used in public health infectious disease surveillance, with the exception of HPV. And if you know anyone working on the HPV impact study, we've actually looked to those guys a lot to help us develop this system. So there's a lot of advantages to using histopathology, but the main disadvantages, or challenges rather, are that the specimens have to be returned to the submitting hospital, and results of histopathology tests are narrative and text-based. So they're not binary, positive or negative, just like culture, and that's been our biggest challenge. So the question we had to answer was, can we design an algorithm to search these narrative text-based histopathology results? And so we gave it a shot, and here's what we came up with. We wanted to start with hospital histopathology reports. We would deduplicate them and then screen them for containing any of these fungal-related terms, and the asterisks indicate wildcards. And then we searched for exclusion terms that would let us know that we could rule out those reports as not being mold-related, and these are our exclusion terms. And then we figured of the possible cases after exclusion, we'd probably have to do some hand-checking because there's a lot of different ways to say, I don't see any mold in these pathology specimens, and you can't design an algorithm that captures all of those. So we knew there would be some hand-checking. And finally, we wanted to have a small enough group of specimens at the end that they could be quickly medically screened to go on for further case review. And to our delight and surprise, we found that we can get down to a manageable number of potential mold cases using this strategy. And so we tested the algorithm using 6 months' worth of reports from one hospital for a total of about 46,000 histopathology records, of which 1,400, or about 3%, contained our fungal terms. And from there, 80% contained the exclusion terms, and then I personally reviewed the other 20%. After about an hour or two, I had it whittled down to 82 that we considered potential cases or possible cases that would go on to additional screening. And so this worked out with our 6 months of test data, but it seemed pretty complicated. And so we wanted to know, is this something that was technologically and logistically feasible in the context of our surveillance system when it went live? And so what I want to do is share with you some of the results we've seen from the very first 2 months of this surveillance system. So two of our three pilot hospitals are online and reporting. And in those first 2 months, they have done a total of 19,416 total histopathology tests. Of those reports, 478, or 2.4%, contained our fungal screening terms. And then we were able to whittle that down to 138 possible cases that did not include our exclusion terms. Our surveillance officer took about an hour and a half to manually review those, whittled them down to 35. And then of those, actually 34 were excluded for a number of reasons listed here. Either they were non-residents of the catchment area, they contained candida, and that wasn't actually included in the pathology report, or they were allergic disease. So there's actually one that is currently in full chart review right now, and we are eagerly awaiting the result of that. So in summary, mold infection surveillance is lacking in the U.S. CDC and the Georgia Emerging Infection Program teamed up to develop a mold infection surveillance system. And we think pilot testing is critical because identifying true mold infections is really complex. Histopathology is an important part of a mold infection case definition. And a novel histopathology report text search algorithm is actually feasible. And finally, this method is in use currently, and we're going to evaluate it in 6 months, so stay tuned for next year's CSTE. Thanks to all of our collaborators, partners, everyone who's worked on this so far, and I'll take questions at the end.